Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
From AccuWeather.com, this is Everything Under the Sun. It's our weekly podcast featuring in-depth interviews with experts from AccuWeather and from around the world, bringing you behind-the-scenes information, stories, and news on the weather, climate change, and the outdoors, covering topics from the worlds of science, sports, and space. It's all the information you need to weatherproof your life. And now, here's the host of Everything Under the Sun, AccuWeather meteorologist Dean DeVore.
Friends, welcome in episode 9 here of the summer series. What we do here on Everything Under the Sun is we take where the weather meets your life and we help weatherproof your life to get you through. And this summer, it has been a long summer, especially in the middle of the country. A lot of heat and humidity. We've seen it at times out west. We've seen it surge into the east. We're getting another surge as we head into the weekend ahead here into the northeast and along the I-95 corridor. A lot of brutal heat heading into the weekend and still pretty hot and humid with thunderstorms. Chances up. We're going to talk to Joe Lundberg later on in the podcast in our weather for the upcoming weekend and week beyond. But Joe's also going to be part of our First Rays of Focus segment as millions of students from the middle school through the high school and up and even to the college level get ready for their fall sports season with 2 or 3 a day practices as we get into this next couple of weeks. I wanted folks to understand how the body works in this situation. We'll use Joe's situation and his experience with the Ironman that he participated in just a couple of weeks ago in the heart of the last heat wave up in Lake Placid, New York. We'll talk to Joe about that, and we'll talk to Tony Wolf from Penn State about how you can keep yourselves and each other cool, and especially some of the things you need to think about for those students that are heading off to high school, college, and other practices here in the next couple of weeks. Friends, sit back and relax. It's time to talk about everything under the sun from AccuWeather.com. Over the next couple of weeks, millions of middle school, high school, and college students will be heading out on the fields, the soccer fields, field hockey fields, football fields, as they get ready for fall sports here, and even the ones that are practicing indoor sports like girls volleyball, which is a prominent fall sport. Even those folks are subjected to this heat and humidity that we're going to really feel here over the next couple of weeks, even in places that weren't as hot earlier in the summer. As we've talked about the last couple of weeks, summer has been surging into the Northeast and the Great Lakes. Our own Joe Lundberg has been part of AccuWeather for 30 or more years. You know him from the radio, TV, and work with our clients. And I also want to bring in Tony Wolf. He is a postdoctoral researcher. Dr. Wolf at Penn State is someone that Joe knows because Joe and Tony's wife train and ride together as they get ready for some of these big events. Joe, just a couple of weeks ago, was part of an Ironman competition. That's where they combine running, swimming, and running a marathon in the immense heat. We're going to talk to Joe about that experience. We're going to talk to about Tony about how Joe coped with that kind of heat and humidity, how as he gets older, it may not be coping as better. And for our youth, as they get ready to go out on the fall practice fields in this intense heat and humidity, some things that you and they can do over the next couple of weeks to get acclimated and ready for that. We join Tony and Joe with me here on Everything Under the Sun from AccuWeather.com. Tony, it sounds like all those things that you've been researching and looking at were kind of epitomized by what Joe just went through a couple of weeks ago. I mean, Joe and I are similar in age and both came at a life situation where both of us had had some health issues. And I was much bigger than Joe. I was up to 383 pounds and I've taken steps over the last 10 years to get my health in, and Joe has too. And one of that culminations has been Joe's participation in Ironman triathlons. And that's, Joe, how many now have you done total?
This was my third full distance Ironman that I've attempted. I've completed two, and this one I got 90% of the way, but didn't quite finish the deal with the marathon. I only got a half marathon in on a week ago Sunday.
Yeah. So again, this goes back to the second to last Sunday in July. Now, this Ironman, you know, we hear that word or that term bandied about, but there's only a select few races that are actually able to use that terminology, right, Joe, because of being an official length and things in each of the disciplines?
Yeah, I mean, they have Ironman is a brand. They basically have, I guess, have coined the term, but they've taken over the branding of it, and they run these events all around the world. I mean, there's one practically every weekend somewhere in the world. Sometimes there's multiples. Sometimes they do what they call 70.3s, which would be half the distance, a half Ironman, and they also run some other things. But yeah, it's a you for the full distance Ironman, you swim 2.4 miles, and then you bike for 112 miles, and then if that's not enough punishment, you decide to go run a marathon on top of that.
Yeah, and then that's the last thing, right? You know, why can't you get the marathon out at the beginning and then do the other fun stuff? To me, the funner stuff, but it isn't. I mean, I just, you know, any of those things, even just a fraction of each of those things would be too much for me personally. But
well, as you pointed out, you know, when we were bigger versions of ourselves many years ago, those were thoughts that had never entered my mind.
Foreign.
And as I lost weight and started to investigate things like cycling and then come in contact with these other people who had bigger dreams and goals than I did, I started to wonder, well, could I run? And I'd had knee surgery back in 01. And the doctor then who did it said, yeah, you probably don't want to run. You probably don't want to play football. And I didn't play football and I hated running. So I figured, hey, I got nothing to worry about. But, you know, the curiosity got the better of me. And I started trying to investigate, well, what can I do? And I just kept pushing the barriers, And eventually I got talked into doing an Ironman, and I've not stopped just yet.
Now Tony's wife is a frequent partner, riding partner and training partner with you. So that's the connection here. So Tony, when you were thinking about people like Joe and your wife training for these extreme events, especially in the summertime heat, what are some of the things that you've passed along to them in terms of ideas about preparation and thinking ahead? You know, I think so many people think about the event and what I need to do for that day, but these kinds, especially an Ironman, preparing for that in the heart and heat of summer takes preparation even above that first time that you actually do the event, correct?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a tough balance with that. So obviously you kind of have to balance your own training to continue to improve your fitness, but doing it in the heat, both, you know, there are some potential safety concerns that come with that if it gets too extreme, but also, you know, even short of that, training quality is impaired to some extent when you're experiencing heat stress. So with, you know, increased sweating rates and increased blood flow to the skin, which is one of the mechanisms of cooling ourselves during when we're experiencing heat stress, that increases cardiovascular demand just overall.
So you exponentially, right? So you're not only are you trying to keep up and create enough energy in your body and enough power to do the sport or the activity, there's also a large percentage of your body working to do the activity of cooling you off, which that's when you get to the overload situation, right? When all of those things are trying to do things at once.
Yeah. So your circulatory system is trying to provide all the blood flow to the muscles that's needed to support the demands of the exercise, but also to the skin to meet the demands of the thermoregulatory demands. So that places a pretty large cardiovascular strain. And eventually, you know, you just can't pedal as hard or run as fast or whatever it may be. So it's important to, you know, when you're getting into that hot season, start to heat acclimate and do it kind of in a systematic fashion that both makes it safe and sustainable and also helps you maintain the quality of your training.
So let's go back a week ago Sunday again and talk to Joe a little bit about that day. How hot was it? how hot have you done something similar in and as much humidity? I mean, you're a meteorologist. You knew what you were getting into going into it. And the climatological idea that could be that hot and humid. And then certainly as we got closer within that week or so, we knew that heat surge was really going to be going that week. I mean, talk about some of your thinking going into that event and some of the things the organizers were telling you and the people involved to help try to keep everything and everyone safe in that event, Joe.
Well, going into it, I think one of the biggest concerns that I had as a meteorologist and also the folks at Lake Placid were thunderstorms and what they would have to do in terms of safety for the cyclists. Now, that turns out that was a non sequitur. We didn't have to worry about that. But it quickly became apparent that it was going to be a very warm day and also very, very humid. And as that became more apparent, I quickly adjusted my game plan. I went in with the idea that, okay, it was a swim. I mean, I knew I wasn't going to be fast anyway. And then bike, I was probably going to back off my intensity level so that I could kind of reduce my sweat rate and keep my body, hydrated as best as I could in preparation for running the run plan. I was hoping to run at least the first half marathon before, dialing it back to, what they call the Ironman shuffle, where you walk more than you run. But as that humidity became more and more apparent, I said, all right, I'm not going to be able to run that much. I've got to run and walk. And I immediately went into that mode. But on that day, when the sun was out at times, it was like 85, 86, and probably road temperatures were in the 90s with dew point temperatures that were in the mid 60s. It was very uncomfortable for that. Mm-hmm. And you start sweating and you're continually exercising. You don't ever stop sweating unless you completely stop for a period of time. So you're losing all those fluids. And I tend to lose a lot of salt when I sweat, probably more so than the average person. I've never had a study done on that. I'd like to know that. But that compounded itself. And then once I went on to the run, you don't have that cooling effect of going into the breeze that the cycling would create. So that just, I think, exacerbated my sweat loss and fluid loss. And eventually I started cramping in my legs. And at that point in time, I had to really slow things down.
I think that's an important point, and I'll point over to Tony. We can talk about generalities of things in terms of the way people handle heat stress, whether they're really being exerting themselves or not. But the truth is everybody's metabolism and body makeup is different. And so we're all going to handle that differently. You can put 10 people in a room, same conditions, same activities, and some people are going to come out on a better situation than others. How do you know that, Tony? How do you know that going in? Are there ways to find out how well you and your body do in heat stress situations? Is that important to know for athletes as we head into this busy time where folks are going to start training for the fall sports in the heat of summer?
Tough to say for sure without doing specific lab testing. So going back to what Joe was saying about individual sweat rates or people who sweat more or less or excrete more or less salt in their sweat, it's a little bit hard to know without doing some sort of lab testing. But generally speaking, people who weigh more create more metabolic heat. Like I'm 200 pounds, right? So,
but you're tall, right?
Somebody else who's 150 pounds, they're going to be creating a lot of lot less metabolic heat, especially going up hills or during running. So just they don't heat up as fast just for that reason alone. And another important component of keeping yourself cool, thermoregulating, is just body surface area. So we talk about body surface area to mass ratio because all of our heat dissipation happens through our skin. So the more skin surface area we have, the better we do dissipating heat. But if we have more mass per unit of surface area, then it's kind of a disadvantage relative to somebody who has less mass per unit of surface area. So those are important components. Also just absolute fitness. So like maximal aerobic capacity is one way that we measure fitness, particularly in endurance athletes. So those with higher VO2 max, or you know, maximal aerobic capacity, tend to thermoregulate better. And then heat acclimation or acclimatization is also a really important component of that. So, and that takes significant intentional kind of training your body to become acclimated. It takes about 10 days of back-to-back exposures or repeated exposures every day to become fully acclimated. You know, again, that takes a lot of kind of intention to become acclimated. A lot of people think, well, it's hot out, so I'm going to become acclimatized, you know, but that's not really necessarily the case. If you're training early in the morning to avoid the heat, you're not really going to become right. acclimated. So yeah, all of those are important components that kind of shape the overall picture.
We've been kind of coming at this, not that Joe's an elite Ironman athlete, but he is certainly somebody that does it. And there's a lot of us that don't do it. I think about as we get ready now, and again, we're talking to Dr. Tony Wolf. He is a postdoctoral researcher at Penn State, and this is his bread and butter, folks, how folks handle heating and cooling and how their bodies work. And we're talking with our very good colleague, Joe Lundberg, who is not only an amazing meteorologist, but has become an athlete in his own right in terms of, you know, long distance riding and running and swimming and culminating in Ironmans. And we're getting ready for folks. This is an important time. I think we're just days, if not a week or more at most, away from a lot of folks heading back to the practice fields. You know, we get ready for fall sports and the cranking out of summer. And as Joe and I both know, there's a lot of heat and humidity that are pushing northward again here into the Northeast and the Great Lakes as we get into this weekend. And it's going to sizzle and sweat and swelter. So let's kind of think about this now as we go through the next couple of minutes, how we would talk to our kids, our younger sons and daughters who are going to be out there. And, you know, is it too late to start to get ready to acclimate yourself, knowing that this is going to be such a hot period coming up in the next couple of weeks as kids go out and start practicing again? Are we able to trust that our folks that are with those kids, the coaches and the trainers and stuff, know the things that they need to? Maybe, Tony, maybe a few thoughts from you. And I know, Joe, you've got some good thoughts on this as well.
I don't think it's too late to acclimate. Certainly, like I said, it takes about 10 days of continuous exposures, daily exposures to the heat to become acclimated. And of course, that the degree of acclimation is going to depend on the environment in which you're, you know, participating in physical activity or whatever, practicing. So I think that a really important component of this is that as these kids are going back to school and starting to get back to practice for whatever sport they're participating in, I mean, the most important thing is to try to inform the coaches and the parents, like you kind of mentioned. It takes a couple of weeks for those adaptations to occur. And so particularly in sports like football, where they're wearing relatively heavy equipment, that really it not only the weight of the equipment, again, if you're carrying more weight, you're creating more metabolic heat, so you're heating up more. So there's that component, and also that, you know, shoulder pads or helmets, whatever, those create micro environments that make it a little more difficult to actually dissipate heat. So harder to evaporate sweat through those pads. And also the air passing over the skin has a cooling effect, and you're not getting as much of that effect. So it's really important to start out, if it's hot, with, you know, maybe reducing the amount of equipment that the kids are wearing. So our lab in the past has done some research looking at whether football players are wearing full uniforms or just shells or shorts and t-shirts only. And that kind of shifts those. If you're wearing less clothes, you can tolerate higher temperatures and humidity for a given metabolic heat production. So really starting out with less equipment, making sure that it's safe in that regard, allowing the kids to acclimate, and then starting to add on more of that equipment and more of the uniform and everything that they're going to be expected to wear in competition.
Joe, you know, you and I come from this with a maturity level because, you know, we've been through life for 55 to 60 years or so. And so we know it. I think kids or young folks come at this stuff with a level of invincibility in their mind that they can't be zapped by the heat and humidity. You know, you were out there a couple of Sundays ago with folks your age and then younger folks. Everyone was having trouble, I'm sure, in that heat and humidity. This is not something that even if you're young and you think, oh, I don't have to worry about this, you do need to worry about this because it is going to be, looks like this next stretch of week or two, especially in areas that, you know, maybe started off a little bit cooler this summer, really seeing the heat surge, and we're seeing more surges in the next couple of weeks when these kids are going to be out. So you really need to, parents especially need to kind of push to their kids that they need to think about this stuff a little bit and plan ahead. Is that a fair statement in your mind?
It's a fair statement. Tony speaks of the, you know, getting acclimatized to the environment. And I know when I first started cycling seriously back in 06, my time to cycle was after work. So it was in the afternoon hours when my wife was at work and kids were in school. Right, so I had that 3-hour window, right? When it was just me. And, you know, in June and July and August, what do we have? 85, 90 degree heat and humidity. And I found that over a period of time that my body did, adjust to it. And I grew to kind of enjoy that kind of environment. So, you know, when I see weather like this that's coming up where it's going to be, you know, in the 90s with high humidity, it's not one of those things where you can't go out and do things, but you have to be smart about it. Limit your exposure outside. If you do it, you know, as Tony says, on a repeated basis, your body will learn to adjust to certain things. I mean, is, you know, obviously, you know, when it gets to be 98, 100 degrees, you know, that's matching your body temperature. If you're exerting stuff and trying to put out that kind of heat, you know, it becomes more and more of a challenge. So, you know, Tony probably could speak to this more than I could, but, you know, there are other things that you have to do on top of getting acclimatized, like, you know, making sure you're staying on top of hydration and being careful of your electrolyte loss.
Electrolytes and then the right nutrients, right? Leading up to and during the event itself, Tony, right?
Definitely. And also just, you know, when it gets to those more extreme temperatures, if it's getting into the hundreds, implementing work rest ratios that allow you to, you know, so you're not having a continuous rise in body temperature. You have some rest time built in that allow you to kind of recover, let your core temperature come down a little bit and keep it safe in that way.
I know that the Ironman officials, you know, they'd be more likely to, you know, more properly speak on this, but I think that there are certain points at which they might consider it unsafe. I know that there was some sort of triathlon. I don't think it was related to Ironman in Boston the same day that I was doing mine in Lake Placid, where I think they canceled it because of the extreme conditions. But they have run these events. I know there was one earlier this year in St. George, Utah, and it was brutally hot, and the did not finish rate, the DNF rate, was like 20%, which is way above normal. At Lake Placid, it's normally, they say, around 8%. This year, it was 16%. I was one of the victims because of the cramping issues that I suffered. But yeah, I mean, in extreme conditions like that, you can do, but you have to recognize that your performance is going to suffer, you know, because, you know, your body's working harder to get rid of that heat that you're generating on a hot and humid day. And you just have to be smart about it and know your body. And, you know, if you're suffering, you know, beginning to suffer from some signs of fatigue, you're maybe feeling a little disoriented, you got to pull the plug. And thankfully, I was smart enough to recognize that, you know, if I kept going, there was going to be no reward for me continuing to do what I was doing. There was only going to be harm. So that's why I pulled the plug.
Man, and as we go through the next few weeks, we certainly hope that there's people around our young folks to pull that plug if they need to pull it here in that situation. But, you know, as parents, I think we can keep an eye on the forecasts and all that. And both of you, some really great information. Dr. Tony Wolf, Joe Lundberg, thank you so much for joining us and talking about this important subject as we get ready to get out there, especially our younger folks getting ready for the fall sports season with these practices in the hot and steamy late summer. Tony and Joe, thanks so much for being with us on Everything Under the Sun.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Perfect. Tony. That was fun. Yeah, I learned some things there.
If you'd like contact information on Tony, you can go to the website healthyaging.psu.edu/people/SAW85. We're going to put that link in our notes section. We're also going to talk to Tony more in the future, if we can, about these kinds of things that he's doing, because I think as many of us continue to stay more active as we get older, these are kinds of things that we would like to know about how the weather and the environment interact with our bodies and our health. Joe Lundberg will stick around and join me coming up next as we take his experience from this past couple of weeks and go forward as he's getting ready for some vacation, but others of us are going to be out in the heat and humidity this upcoming weekend and week beyond. We'll talk to Joe about how that weather looks up next. This is Everything Under the Sun from AccuWeather.com. And welcome back to Everything Under the Sun from AccuWeather.com as we roll on here talking about the weather for the upcoming weekend and week beyond. And Joe Lundberg joins me again. And Joe, first, let's go back to that segment that we just did with Tony and you. And, you know, you said to me after we were done with that interview that you learned a lot of things and some things I think people can use going into this weekend with this tremendous surge of heat and humidity to start the weekend and continuing, it looks like, up and down the eastern seaboard. It's going to be really sticky and awful.
Two of the takeaways from it were, one, as you get older, your ability to mitigate heat from your body is diminished. So I learned that. I intuitively it made sense, but it was kind of harsh to hear that as I'm getting older.
Me too.
And the other thing is, you know, acclimating to the heat and humidity. You can acclimate to it. Our bodies will get used to it, you know, if you're, you know, persistent about doing things in it. Obviously, you have to be careful when you get to extreme levels. You know, your body can only tolerate so much. I mean, if it's 105 degrees outside, right, you can't get rid of that much heat, you know, especially if you're exerting yourself. So you do have to be more cognizant of staying hydrated and taking more frequent breaks. But that's the kind of stuff that I learned from talking to Tony.
And I think, you know, that makes a lot of sense, too, because honestly, if you have practices, if your kids have practices or stuff outside over the next maybe in a week or two, this would be a good time to get folks out and acclimated because there is going to be a lot of heat and humidity. The most brutal heat will be at the end of the week going into the weekend in some of those I-95 corridor cities. But we're not easing off the pedal much, maybe a little bit on the heat. But actually, I think the humidity in some of those, like New York City up to Boston, looks worse this weekend.
The front that is coming through Chicago never gets to the eastern seaboard. So the I-95 corridor is going to stay in the thick of the tropical humidity throughout the weekend and in the first half of next week. You're right. The heat backs off a little bit, but it comes back, I think, starting Sunday and lasting through Tuesday in these places. And Monday and Tuesday could be just about as hot as today. Maybe not quite, but it's going to be very uncomfortable. So if you have options to do exercise or things during the cool of the morning, comparatively so, or late in the afternoon and evening when the sun is much lower in the sky, take that option. Don't try to avoid doing stuff, you know, during the midday and the first part of the afternoon when it's just too hot.
Showers and thunderstorms, probably most prevalent away from the immediate coast, but I think we're going to see a zone in the upper plain or the central plains in the upper Midwest. It could be pretty active with heavy thunderstorms. And then this ring of fire with showers and thunderstorms curling all the way back through the inner Mountain West in Denver down with the monsoonal moisture, a big hot mess in Texas, some showers and thunderstorms along the Gulf Coast. Pacific Northwest, pretty warm, but pretty dry, not the intense heat that we've seen at times there.
Not intense heat, but by the end of the week and the start of next week, you know, you're going to see that heat building. I think it's a shorter-term heat wave for those folks, maybe 3 or 4 days at most, as opposed to what they've had recently when Seattle and Portland had a really lengthy hot stretch. I think this one is much, much shorter. But you're right, there's going to be plenty of heat in the middle part of the country, and what little cooling you're going to see in the Northern Plains and Midwest, I think that's reversed next week. So get prepared next week for another surge of heat for those places.
We saw one winter forecast from a source come out already this week. A lot of talk. And I know you mentioned this. I know the long range team, which you're a major part of, already some talk about some analogs back to a winter that I would like to forget, 2013-14, in terms of maybe some onslaughts of Arctic air. So we're kind of putting our own winter forecast together, but it's something we got to watch here.
It is something you have to watch. You know, when you're putting together these winter forecasts, you take a look at various pieces of the puzzle. You try to figure out, okay, which one's most dominant? Will there be one dominant one, or will it be a combination of things, and do they play off one another as the season wears on? So you have to be careful about latching onto one of the these signals and think that's going to be the one. Right. And it correlates to the winter of 2013-2014, which was brutal across most of the country in terms of cold and snow. So, you know, we got to put the pump the brakes on that kind of stuff. It's a factor. It is in the analog package that we're looking at, but it may not be the most dominant one. So let's not get too concerned about the winter just yet.
Joe, thanks for your help this week on the episode. The interview and this segment, it's been great talking to you.
Have a great weekend. Stay cool.
And you have a great vacation.
I will.
Joe may be taking vacation, but this podcast won't. We'll be back next week with episode 10 of our summer series, and I'm excited about it. We're going to talk to our interns that have been with us for the last few months here at AccuWeather. These four young women and men have been doing amazing work for us, and we're going to talk to them about some of the projects they did for us, some of the things they uncovered, about their view of meteorology as we make this turn into where weather and air quality and climate change continue to be at the forefront of everybody's thoughts, and also their thoughts about, you know, what it's like to be thinking about being a meteorologist. Maybe you know a young person who wants to be a meteorologist. We'll give you some advice on their experiences over the last couple of years in getting into the profession. The interns will be with us next week. For our executive producers, Ken Prell and Andrew Robb. For our guests, Tony Wolf and Joe Lundberg. And for our hundreds of team members here at AccuWeather that work hard every day to weatherproof your life, I'm meteorologist Dean DeVore. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week. With everything under the sun from AccuWeather.com.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. Be sure to subscribe to, rate, and review Everything Under the Sun on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. And of course, if you have an idea for a future podcast, just email us at AccuWeather.podcast@AccuWeather.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.